Hello everyone, welcome to today's podcast. So today I'll be kind of giving a reflection of the course of the module Research in Africa in 21st Century. So I'll start with the first week and look at some of the content that we looked at and give my sort of my thoughts on each of the reading that we were required to do and the videos that we were required to watch. So yeah, so I will begin with Sarah Pink, her Advances in Visual Methodology. So I actually really enjoyed this piece. So let me kind of just first start explaining, and then I can give my general thoughts on it towards the end. So Sarah Pink, as an ethnographer, so at the beginning, in her introduction of Advances in Visual Methodology, she points out that there has been a recent rise in the use of visual methodology, especially in 21st century. And there has been a lot of books that talk about this, that have been focusing on the importance of visual methodology in the research world and even beyond that. She explains how this kind of emergence kind of indicates the acceptance of the visual in qualitative research practices. And it has in recent years inspired, you know, innovative and important studies, which I agree with. I think it's given more room for researchers to kind of, be free with their research and allow them to be creative. Something that I really find really interesting was that she points out that theory, technology and method should not be separated. In fact, they should be kind of addressed together, as they have a powerful relationship. So she advised us that we look at them all, we engage with them all simultaneously. She explains how the visual methodologies kind of offer us a critical and reflexive opportunity, in essence, opportunity with kind of like in the interdisciplinary practices in the field of, you know, research. She also explains how visual methodology can actually be a route to knowledge. I thought this was quite interesting because often when you think of knowledge, you don't actually think, or knowledge production isn't often traditionally tied to visual, digital or visual methodology or anything kind of creative in essence. When I think of knowledge, I think of kind of academic, written, traditional forms of more traditional roots in essence. But she explains how digital media have inspired advances in research. Media art practices kind of create new routes to knowledge, and it is kind of representation, and it allows also the audience to engage with the visual research. So not only are you producing, not only is it a route to knowledge, but it's also a way of the audience engaging with the researcher. So yeah, I thought that was quite interesting. When I saw that specific part, I think I took a bit more time to think about it, because I was like, okay, what does this actually mean? What does it mean for visual methodology to be a route for knowledge? And as I read, she explains that visuals kind of become a way of arriving at a particular type of knowledge and kind of uncovering layers of knowledge or the ways of knowing. It gives us kind of not just one direct route to knowledge, it gives us different routes to knowledge, I guess. So it's quite, is a creative way of coming to knowledge, I guess. So that's a bit about Sarah Pink, Advances in Visual Methodology. I thought it was generally a good starting point now that I've finished the course. a great starting point for us to get an understanding of vision methodology and kind of see how it's come about and how it has influenced research, and how it can kind of be a way of knowing, or a route to knowledge. And this kind of really, after reading this, it was kind of a smooth transition to the next reading, which I'm about to talk about, The Digital Humanities by Burdick, the introduction. I thought this piece, at first I was a bit like, you know, okay, I don't know how this one, I didn't have any I didn't have positive thoughts towards it. I don't know, for some reason why, I don't know. I think I was more optimistic about the Sarah Pink reading. But so let me kind of begin with the Digital Humanities piece. So this kind of uncovers how we've come to the modern age and how the digital world has come about, and, you know, the history of that. So it kind of starts by explaining how the digital world challenges many of the separations that exist and kind of promotes dialogue, not only across established disciplinary, but also across the, you know, pure, applied, qualitative and quantitative and theoretical versus practical divides. And I thought this was quite interesting because I think nowadays, with the existence of Twitter, with the existence of various digital platforms, I think healthy debates are promoted, and healthy debates are kind of much more the norm now. You know, you're no one kind of is afraid to address the divides that exist between, across different disciplinary. And I think it is quite important, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. Beyond that, it kind of talks about how the first wave of humanities engaging with the computers kind of came about around the 1940s. So this was kind of just a very good, and giving me a good understanding of how we've got here. I mean, before that, I kind of didn't really have a pure understanding of the history of the digital world and how we've got here. So it was a refreshing reading, to be honest. It talked about how after the 1940s there was the migration of materials into the digital forms, and the extension of the traditional methods of editing. So this kind of gave more room to expand, I think, academia, and not just academia but everything in life. There was a more efficient way of, I guess, doing things. Everything migrated online. So as a result of that, then what happened was humanistic research had to kind of mature alongside this process, this advancement. New methods and new ways of thinking had to kind of all immerse themselves in the multidimensional world of the web. And I think this kind of put pressure on scholars. Scholars kind of wrestled with the methods of the media and kind of wondered whether they should be in keeping, whether they should not adopt these methods, whether they should ignore them. And I think that's a battle that still exists in today's world as well. I'm sure that many scholars out there are quite skeptical about the use of social media or the use of the internet for their research. I think that was quite a very interesting aspect of that reading for me, that I kind of thought, yeah, this is something that is just not, that's not unique to the beginning of time when the digital world started to come about, but only, and still goes on now. So another thing that I kind of picked up from it was the art of oratory kind of altered, or kind of re-emerged. I don't think altered is the word. Re-emerged is the word, sorry. So with this meant that, like, there was more kind of the language, the art of kind of speaking became a norm again. So there was more to, I guess, dialogue in this sense. it kind of re-emerged and kind of became a way of kind of, I guess, presenting knowledge rather than just having the written forms of knowledge, in essence. So digital humanities kind of became an extension of traditional knowledge, skills and methods, not only a replacement for them. So despite there being new art, new ways of kind of producing knowledge, it didn't sort of replace the traditional ways. Those still did exist, but I think the digital world kind of came about to support those existing traditional means. And I think another thing that I picked up on, beyond the, I guess, the idea that the digital world came about and, you know, the history of it, is the fact that he explains how with the emergence of the digital world, there came about with it a new culture that embraces frequent productive failure. And this is very, very intriguing to me because I think that's something that could be also said about today's world. I don't know if this is something that's positive or negative. I thought about it and I don't know if I think it's either both or maybe one of them. I think it is important to kind of not always look at failure as, you know, failure and as a negative thing. Sometimes failure can be a way to kind of find answers, in essence. So if you fail once, then you know next time, I guess, that isn't that you may be closer to success. So yeah, that was really interesting to me. I'm still kind of not sure whether I think is an entirely negative thing, but it is a definite, I definitely think that is something that is in keeping with the digital world, something we encourage, I guess, productive failure, as he puts it. But yeah, so that was digital humanities in a nutshell. I found that really, really interesting. I think that both of them really tied really well, Sarah Pink and the digital humanities reading. I think they both offered a great insight into the starting point of, I guess, technology in research and in academia, and how they both kind of changed the way we look at knowledge. So yeah, that was really interesting. I really thought also the YouTube interview with Sarah Pink was a great touch, final touch. It was just beyond just reading. I think it was good to just see a video and kind of get see the person behind the book, I guess. I was intrigued to see that video. So in the video, she begins by explaining that she's an ethnographer, and specializes in visual ethnography, as already mentioned in the book. I guess she talks about how the use of visual methods is highly dependent on your kind of research topic. So he asked, the interviewer asked what questions, what methods should one use for a research topic, what visual methods? And her answer was interesting to me. I thought that it was appropriate for one to first look at their research topic before, I guess, deciding a visual methodology or visual method. She explains how sometimes it may not be suitable to the type of knowledge you are generating. Sometimes she explains how she, in her previous research, she had the intention of doing a video, kind of collection of videos, but eventually when she got to the location, she realized that, in fact, this was not appropriate for the participants and for the location that she's chosen, and that most people were actually more familiar with taking pictures rather than taking videos. So she had to adapt that eventually. So yeah, that was something that was also useful for my own research, because I think it's important before one decides what visual method to use to think about the research topic and kind of see if it's suitable to that before choosing one. So she also explains, just going on from this, to how we often start with ideas of what methods we will use, but once we start to engage with the participants, we realize that it may not be suitable, especially in ethnography. So this was quite an intriguing part of the video for me, because I think it made me rethink my own research topic. And as I initially I had ideas of, you know, doing a documentary and, you know, seeing whether I could, instead of writing a whole thesis, do a small documentary and then write some of it. But this made me think, okay, well, is this well suited to my research topic? So yeah. So he then goes on to ask what you get from visual research and visual methods. And she explains, amongst other things, but one of the things that stood out to me is that she explains how you kind of get a record of the research process and encounters you've had with ethnography. I'll go on to this in my next podcast, which focuses on the second week of our lectures, but just briefly, with ethnography, you're able to kind of put yourself back in time through the content you've collected, through the visual methods you've used. You're able to go back in time and kind of have a sense of what it was like then, even though you're not there. So it takes you back in time, and it also allows you to kind of be a second researcher in essence. You pick up on things that you didn't pick up on during the process or at the time. So it allows you to re-experience things again. She explains, to quote, "Even 10 years later, I feel like I'm almost back there again." So this kind of is an important thing for ethnographers, because that means they can, this offers them a further analysis. It invites an analysis that is empathetic, I guess. And also beyond that, beyond the benefits of the researcher being able to go back in time and having to go through things and analyze things further and have empathy again, it also allows collaborative research. So yeah, this was, I think this video in general, looking at how she, I mean, I guess from the horse's mouth, hearing what she thinks of visual methodology was very important for me. I think it was great to have the video there alongside the reading. After the video, I think I kind of was more in touch with the reading, rather than before it was just words on the, I guess, on a paper. But when watching the video, I could see her passion for visual ethnography, and I could see why she chooses visual ethnography and why she's a visual ethnographer. So yeah, that is it for week one. I hope I didn't bore you guys too much, but yeah, I really enjoyed week one. I think it was a great way to start the course off. I enjoyed all parts of the content. I enjoyed the readings and I enjoyed the video. I think is a great transition into the next week, especially the video. She talks about ethnography, and we talk about ethnography in the week, in week two. So yeah. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the reflection, and I guess had some enjoyed the reflection, and you know, will join me for my next podcast. Thank you so much and have a good evening. كلت ولا يقددوا هدي دايه بلا يقددوا واحد قدامك يا بلا يقددوا والدكتور يا ابلي يقددوا.